for March the 15th, the Ides, I understand. We talk about the God of War trophy debacle, the pricing on the Steam box, and sleeping dogs. Welcome to the 15th level. My name's Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Moneysmith.
And this is the 14th level, a podcast, or 15th level. Yes, there we go. I've got it sorted out. A podcast for people who love video games. I've got my usual accoutrement here. I've got my glass of tea. I've got my liter of seltzer. That tells me it's podcasting time. I had breakfast for dinner earlier tonight. The trick with breakfast for dinner, like a lot of people do that. The pinfall with it is you often eat way too much. So breakfast for dinner, if you pull it to pull it off, you have to limit the portion such that you get the breakfast taste that you would like, without stuffing yourself full of, you know.
I disagree. Breakfast burrito, and just shove that tortilla as full of egg and sausage and cheese and various assorted, assorted peppers. Until it is literally bursting at the seams, and then and only then have you had a successful breakfast for dinner. Mm-hmm.
See, I did a half Belgian waffle, 2 scrambled eggs, and 3 slices of bacon.
Oh, that's fairly hearty.
Yeah. I you know what? I'm a big egg dude. I like eggs. They were large eggs. They weren't jumbo, but still.
I just want to get some. Like an ostrich egg or something. At least one.
just because I hate nature.
Oh, yeah. They're not in nature.
See the chocobo bit in the latest Watch Out for Fireballs. Oh, yeah.
Well, I told you, so sometime when I'm up there, I want, you know, I think I've mentioned this. I want to check an item off my bucket list and make a 3 ham omelet.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
What constitutes a ham?
Episode about that.
We did title an episode because I love that. I love that bit in Brack.
Oh, that whole show is so awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
But, yeah, I feel like ostrich egg would be the way to go.
Huh.
With maybe some lion meat.
we call it the Serengeti platter. So the agenda for tonight, no multiplayer because I literally have no time in my life for you people.
It's not you, it's me.
No, it's definitely you. No, I was absent-minded and I didn't put it out there, and it would be better if we had a shorter show this week anyway. We'll talk about it in the end, boss. But why don't we get to it, fellows?
Sure.
Okay. It's time for the brief. Who wants to step forward and volunteer a story for the brief?
I've got one that me and you had a rather interesting Twitter conversation about.
Do that, because I feel like I have some people to offend. Not offend. I feel like I have some non-controversial statements to make very passionately under the guise of maybe being a controversial, but actually since I'm right, it's not.
And knowing that you'll have the chance to edit it later.
your approach.
Continue.
Well, yeah, it just one of the rare instances of me having my mind changed on the internet. People have probably seen, and this will be old news by the time the episode comes out, but God of War had a trophy called Bros Before Hoes. You got it for attacking Furies, like a female enemy in the game. And people got offended by it, and so Sony Santa Monica patched the game and changed the name of the trophy to Bros Before Foes, which is much less offensive. Of course, all the villains out there were like, hey, but...
what do we ever do? All right, yeah. All that villains. Yeah.
But my initial reaction on this, having played the God of War games... was just kind of really jaded sarcasm. Like, I saw it and I was like, okay, that is probably the most minuscule problem with misogyny out of a fleet of problems with misogyny that God of War has. There are so many other things you could go after in any of the God of War games that you could, you know, point out as just, you know, not taking women seriously or objectifying women or, you know, any one of these things that a trophy name just, I saw that and I just rolled my eyes and I felt like, okay, we're picking the easy battles and not the meaningful ones.
And what made you change your mind?
Funny you should say that. So we, you know, me and you kind of started having this back and forth on Twitter, and you know, you kind of mentioned about the idea of small battles, and you know, adding up, and you know, that kind of got me thinking about the, not necessarily, you know, that how significant the action that Sony took was. Because I, you know, I still think that it's relatively insignificant in the scale of things, but rather the feedback that they get for that action. And so it was really kind of introspective on my part on the initial reaction that I had had, and thinking about, okay, you know, so Sony does this and figures, okay, let's pick something insignificant like a trophy, and we'll kind of listen to people who are outraged and try to be a little more sensitive, and they're probably watching the reaction of what happens. You know, that this will either embolden them or, you know, make them gun shy of changing their stance based on fan reaction. And, you know, specifically in this area where it's something where, you know, bros before hoes is probably one of the least offensive phrases that you could pick from a wide spate of offensive phrases against against women.
True.
Not arguing that it's not offensive at all.
Yeah.
But you know, so they did something, and they did something that ultimately, even if I think it's insignificant in the grand scheme of things, there's no arguing that it is a net positive. You know, for patching out a potentially offensive name. And so, you know, if everyone just flames them for it and says, you know, you guys just are, you know, kowtowing?
Yeah, kowtowing.
Katooing? Bowing?
Cthulhu Katan, yes.
Yes. I don't know non-American words.
I think kowtowing like gumption is one of the most American words.
Yeah.
Wait, it's Chinese.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Huh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what gumption is.
So
you're going to tell me it's French.
Having
next.
The characteristic of Gumby.
Where's that? Okay.
I hadn't thought about Gumby in so long.
You blockhead. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, so if they, you know, if they just get told off even further for doing something that I'm sure a vocal minority was telling them to do, you know, would they ever try something more bold in the future, or would they ever, you know, think twice about being sensitive again in the future if all they got was negative reinforcement for doing something positive? Mm-hmm. So you know, that back and forth between us kind of got me thinking. It's, you know, yeah, I'll take my small victories, and you know, we can't ignore the the bigger problems that exist. But you got to start somewhere.
Well, yeah. Let me. To maybe play devil's advocate, give some negative reinforcement. You know, I think you're saying, you know, they are starting with the you know, something insignificant just to kind of start off. And I think the problem is with this, that's really the issue, is that if they start with something small, you know, that's important, small victories. But they didn't start with something small. They started with something completely insignificant. I don't know. I just feel like this is something where people just need, you know, just need to grow some thicker skin. I mean, it's... I don't know. I feel like you can't... I don't know. It just strikes me as just being kind of PC thing where people just need to grow up and, you know, learn to laugh some.
I don't know. Given the character, okay. So I'm going to come out in terms of I agree with Dennis in that there are larger issues. God of War has always been juvenile in the way that it's treated everything, you know, including hyper masculine machismo and, you know, kind of these you know, childish plots, and of course the way that it objectifies, you know, objectifies women.
And I dislike it for that reason.
Yeah, yeah, and so that's all, you know, kind of some bullshit, right? But I think that this is, you know, an instance where they said something edgy and blah blah blah, and they held up their hand for a high five, and nobody high fived back. Okay.
Well, I guess
so. It's a stupid joke that's based on a stupid phrase that diminishes half of the world's population, our mothers and sisters and all of that. I could go on my feminist, you know, rampages or whatever, but still, it's kind of dumb. It's juvenile, even in the scope of the series. So A, it's not funny. And B, there probably were people who agreed with that. And they happen to all live on a particular social, you know, news aggregation website. And the second somebody came out and said, hey, guys, maybe, you know, maybe not cool. Adam Sessler, his video review show that he does on G4, you know, he was talking about, or not G4, used to be G4. They fired him on Revision 3. on Revision 3, he was talking about this, and there was a bit of an aside where, you know, he said, like, you know, it's a competent enough game, you know, it kind of, it's more God of War, which can be neat, but here are the problems with it. And there was a section in his video review where he came out and said, okay, so this is what broke it for me. And he explained, you know, this kind of thing where that one moment just invalidated a lot of the stuff that he found, you know, just because it was disrespectful. Right. Not irreverent, but, you know, disrespectful in his opinion. You can, yeah, you know, it's up to you to decide. And there were people who came out in droves saying, well, he kills plenty of dudes throughout the entire series, but nobody complains about that. You know, MRAs, right? You know, men's right advocates or whatnot.
Which, and I guess, in full disclosure, I would probably somewhat fall under, although not in the anti-feminist way.
Right, right. So you know, just everybody needs rights, even men, blah blah blah.
Right, exactly.
But so you know, that, like, platonically we can all agree on at least that in terms of keeping the discussion civil.
Right. However,
like, this has been a persistent enough problem that any kind of modicum of any kind of nod towards, you know, addressing the problem of gender and misogyny in video games has been shouted down by people like this. Here recently, there was a video series that came out. I think it was called "Tropes Versus Women in Video Games." Even the announcement, the comments on that video were so bad that they had to turn off the comments on it. You know, like the, like if you look up, like, the responses, blog posts, things like that. Yeah, really big deal. And then if you look at something like, there was a news story about a dad who hacked the ROM of, Donkey Kong to make the, you know, to switch Pauline and Mario. So it was Pauline rescuing Mario because his daughter was wondering why she had to play as the boy and she couldn't play as the girl. This got out. It was a, you know, kind of a good, you know, it was a feel good story.
Right.
And then, I don't know if it was a parody image or not. I, you know, this might invalidate my point somewhat if it's wrong, and this happens to be an example of Poe's Law. But people, you know, somebody hacked Metroid to make Samus a dude, because why would I have to play as a woman if I'm a man, right?
Yeah, but I mean, and so that one, I would compare the outrage over the trophy in God of War to the, you know, making Samus a guy. Like, and so, you know, I guess to maybe, David, to try to put words to kind of some of this sentiment you have, you know, yeah, okay, you know, bros before hoes can be insensitive and, you know, whatever, it's good. You know, like I said, it's, even if it's insignificant, you can't argue if it's a net negative versus a net positive. But, you know, where was the outrage over the more glaring issues in the game? It feels like we're picking something small that we feel like we can win easily to shout about versus tackling the root issues that might be bigger and scarier, or, you know, potentially closer to home.
Yeah, I definitely agree, but I think it's just a disagreement on how you approach a bigger problem, right? Well, I think that the people who disagreed with God of War just didn't buy it, whereas they felt like they could affect the change on something, you know, kind of like this, because you know we have this infrastructure where we can make a change to something like that. It's kind of like, hey, you can easily go in and dummy out that text and make it something a little bit less disrespectful. So why don't you go do that as opposed to let's change the entire aesthetic of this entire series. I don't know that they changed anybody's mind and made them buy the game when they wouldn't have bought it, you know, but still I feel like it was a net positive, however small, for the tone of the discourse. Right.
And I think, go ahead.
I guess kind of where I'm coming from is I think in this situation, I don't think it was a big deal either way, but I, like you said, I think it was a net positive. But what kind of bothers me is I feel like, you know, jokes, comedy, stuff like that, which is what this was supposed to be, however ineffective, are an important part of dialogue, especially on controversial issues. Mm-hmm. And what I worry about is that by focusing on, you know, the small issues like this, you know, focusing on things that are just jokes, you take that away, which I think ultimately inhibits the conversation on it, the dialogue on it. In this case, this wasn't actually contributing to anything on the dialogue, but I worry that by, you know, making that the target, you then... Do you kind of understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I think you're saying that you can say some really, really offensive stuff as long as you have a point, but the second you don't have a point, you kind of lose your right to be offensive.
Also what I'm saying, though, is I think the people that say really offensive stuff with a point, that's valuable, but I worry that it seems like they often get friendly fired. With things like this where someone's being offensive without a point.
Yeah.
So I tend to think it's better, using the friendly fire analogy, not to fire at either.
Yeah. You don't want to have a chilling effect, but I would like to, at the very least, bring up the context. If this was a Hitman game, preview of a little bit later, and like you took somebody out by knocking a rack of yard equipment on them from a couple of stories up, and the trophy or the in-game reward was bros before hoes, like, that would be pretty fucking funny.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, just kind of like, oh gosh, I murdered this guy at the lawn section of Sears. That's pretty cool. You know, like, I could see that being a thing. However, what happens in the game is this fury enemy, I believe, offers him sex. And, you know, like, you know, tries to seduce him before he kills her. And he's like, no, bitch. And then he like you graphically see him like pound her head in and rip her face apart. And then that comes up. That I just like it. I don't know. I agree with you that there shouldn't be a chilling effect on humor. You know, I make a small part of my living, you know, trying to be humorous, you know, both in my day job and even, you know, even on here as the network becomes a thing, you know, one of my shows, our joke is, you know, we're the kings of casual misogyny, and, you know, like the kings of comedy, right? You know, those damn Ross kids, we say some pretty edgy stuff and I try and keep it reined in, but it's often, you know, very much tongue in cheek and we're taking a parodical kind of approach to it. Right. At least I would like to hope so. Dear God. on this show, like last episode alone, I made jokes about 9/11. I very much value the role of humor in the discourse,
right.
But it needs to serve a higher purpose, and you need to look at it in context.
I like what you said earlier, just to put like a capstone on this or whatever, that you know, they kind of, Sony Santa Monica went up for an easy high five and the gaming community didn't really high five back.
Yeah.
Which I think reflects better, you know, regardless of any changes that Sony did or didn't make, reflects better on the gaming community. Not necessarily from a sense of outrage, but just mm-hmm. from a sense of like, you know, that's not my thing. No, thanks. And again, kind of thinking along those same lines, same lines, the positive or negative reaction that the gaming community gives Sony Santa Monica on this decision that they've made, I think can influence decision-making in the future. Even though this decision was insignificant, it's just interesting. I'm curious to watch as more and more games play out. I feel like we're at an interesting time of change in attitudes of, hey, this medium's growing up, so maybe we should grow up a little with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think...
Go ahead.
And like you said, I think the response is the most important thing. You know, it sound. I think the problem they're going to have, though, is that, you know, this game's so far, you know, so far gone, I guess, if you're going to say it overtly negative, that any of the people that were going to, you know, that this would sway their opinion are still not going to buy it.
Yeah. I think it's so you're right, Dennis. The quality and kind of the reasonedness of the arguments against it, you know, like, or the arguments for change, you know, for changing it, you know, that like this rode some pretty major channels, right? There were op-eds that were run on, you know, several major sites, and they were, you know, they just kind of laid out a rational case that, to my mind, kind of outweighs my dismay at the people who kind of knee-jerked against making the change. So, you know, maybe a net positive. Like, the fact that that there were plenty of good articles about it outweighs the idea that the comment section was a bunch of frothing lunatics. Not to ad hominem. That was inappropriate to ad hominem against them. But the nature of the response. What's that?
Clearly, you haven't read a comment section.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. But I mean, just kind of like the arguments for changing it were more compelling, I think, than the arguments against it.
Yeah, so. and I guess maybe I'm in Dennis's position. You know, as you explain it, I think that's a good point. You know, it sounds like it was. You know, net. You know, it sounds like it was a move that was for the best, and you know, it sounds like even like Sony's, you know, even being fairly sincere in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't.
I mean, the studio is headed by a woman. Come on,
is it?
Yeah.
Huh. Neat. Oh, man, I've got a black friend too. So don't use that as an excuse, Sony Santa Monica. I've got a story.
Hopefully it's a little more lighthearted.
Well, I mean, it's more of just like a check-in. So a little while ago, we talked about the prospect of a follow-up to Planescape Torment that was in the works. It had the blessing of Chris Avellone. Or abalone, I forget. Which one's the like the crazy shellfish that you're not allowed to eat anymore?
Abalone.
Abalone, okay, cool. Chris Abalone, he came out and gave it its, you know, his tacit blessing. That was the last time it really checked in. So they put up a Kickstarter for this with a fairly lofty goal of, you know, $900,000, and I believe it was funded in 6 hours.
Woo.
Yikes. Yeah. So Torment, Tides of Numenera. It doesn't take place in the Dungeons and Dragons realm. It takes place in kind of like a similar one developed by Monty Cook, Numenera. But it's going to be pretty much just a sequel to Torment or a spiritual successor. Currently, as of 9:13 p.m. on Tuesday, March the 12th, they've got $2.5 million.
Good God!
I know, right?
Well, I mean, I've never played the original, but is it considered, you know, one of the best role-playing games, like, of all time?
Oh, God, yeah. We did a Watch Out for Fireballs on it. It was the first time that I played it through to completion, and holy crap, if it's even nearly half as inspired as that one, it'll be a success.
I just need to pick, like, a historical favorite and put up a Kickstarter. Like, I'm gonna go up on Kickstarter and be like, hey, I'm gonna make Donnie Darko 2, and I'll get me $2.5 million in 6 hours.
as you drive off on your golden jet ski,
abscond to Mexico.
Oh, margaritas and senoritas. So
yeah, gosh, well, and with Donnie Darko too, the best part is you can just then release the exact same movie and suggest that it's some kind of deep time travel, you know, commentary.
Right.
Just
flip the frame horizontally like they do on YouTube so they don't get caught by the robots.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, but I pledged for it. I just got the one with the soundtrack. I didn't go for the physical box. Yeah, it's going to come out in like December of 2014. So I hope that I like still have this credit card account active.
Oh yeah.
When that comes out. In related news, you know, to the Kickstarter thing, the Dreamfall chapters, like the journey, like, you know, the Longest Journey, sequel, that was funded well as well. Dreamfall chapters. I just want to take a look here because
there was also a Shadowrun game that got funded, right?
Yes, there was a Shadowrun. So it's the Watch Out for Fireballs family reunion.
Yeah, Kickstarter is kicking ass.
I know, right? Yeah, there was Shadowrun Returns. There was actually gameplay footage of that was released here shortly ago, I think. I apologize if I'm incorrect on that. Yeah.
No, I at least saw screens.
Oh, yeah. And then Dreamfall Journey, Dreamfall Chapter is the Longest Journey. That got almost twice its goal with $1.5 million.
Cole, I think you should take credit.
Oh, well, I did give them, I believe, what's the one that I have? I did give them, $25. That might've pushed them over the edge.
Yeah. Do the Bill O'Reilly take credit.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So Ragnar Tornquist.
I meant via giving it the much needed press from Watch
exactly,
Out for Fire.
The Bill O'Reilly thing.
Yes. Okay, cool. Yeah. So Ragnar Tornquist, I will accept an edible arrangement, barring that, a balloon bouquet.
No, you got to stick with edible arrangements are the best.
What about balloon bouquet?
Every edible, oh man, like something straight out of Wonka? Dog.
Exactly.
Dog, dude.
You eat it and then your voice gets all squeaky.
Yeah, no, too much papaya in every edible arrangement I've ever seen. A lot of they lean pretty heavy on the papaya.
Oh, I'll man. Be totally honest. Yeah. What is a papaya?
It is a passion fruit.
Oh, okay.
It is
I
akin
like that.
To the mango.
Yeah,
yeah. A little bit of it goes a long way, I think. Kind of like mango. Mm. We have these bottled smoothies at work, and they're like
miles 90... for mango.
What's that? Miles for mango. Yes. YMMV, your mangoes may vary. we have these bottled smoothies in the fridge at work, and I swear they're like 90% banana with like 5% passion fruit and then like water, and that's it. That's like way too much banana in your smoothie, dog.
I suppose. I mean, bananas, well, yeah, like bananas are crazy cheap.
Not true.
I guess there's some tangent. I guess there's some weird thing where bananas don't follow any of the normal laws of economics because they're so plentiful in South America that they act like a commodity good, but they rot so quickly that for the rest of the world they act like
a luxury good. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. A luxury good. I'm sorry.
that's fine. Yeah, so I forget where that came from. Ragnar Tornquist, you owe me, dog. So that's my story. I'm excited for those games to come out in 2 years.
Now, Journey.
We hope.
Journey, you know, I've not played it. I have absolutely no knowledge of it. But just, you know, it seems like, you know, it's a big time. It was point-and-click adventure, something like that?
Yeah. It was a point-and-click adventure that came out kind of towards the, like, I believe it came out like 2000. Yeah.
That kind of strikes me as something that would be easy to do a sequel only for the fans to realize that maybe it was better off without a sequel. You know kind of what I mean?
Maybe, but I mean, they've had a sequel to it already, and it was pretty well received. Yeah.
Okay.
It was called Dreamfall. Was the name of it. So like people are invested in this, you know, kind of in this universe, rightfully so. It's a delightfully charming game. How about you, David? Any brief stories?
Yeah, fairly brief. Did you see the Steam box now has a price tag?
Oh no, this must be breaking news.
Yes, it will cost $1,000.
Okay.
Well, I'm saying a little. It will cost apparently around $1,000, which strikes me as kind of a bad idea.
Which strikes me as $1,200.
$1,200, yes.
Well, it just, I mean, it seems like that kind of defeats the purpose of a Steam box. I mean, isn't the purpose of the Steam box to be, hey, I really want to play PC games, but I don't want to buy a PC?
Maybe. I think that they might be playing a bigger game, which is not so much we want to give you like a $500 box, but we want to give you a standardized box, you know?
Yeah, I suppose.
So I think that that might be the game that they're playing, which, you know, who knows if that's the right move or not. $1,000, like if I were to plop down on a gaming PC right now, like, you know, I wouldn't want to go for like, oh boy, a triple SLA NVIDIA, you know, Infinity cards and, you know, an i10 processor that they only made 5 of. I wouldn't do that. You know, about $1,000 seems right to me for a mid-range gaming PC. And just the idea that I could go on to steampowered.com and click a box and have it sent to me, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I just, what gaming experiences are you going to have on this $1,000 machine that you wouldn't be able to have on either A, your $500 console, or B, on a low-end laptop that's going to play the indie darlings that you want?
It'd be like, basically like playing console games, except good. Sorry.
With the mouse and keyboard.
Well, I mean, the Steam Box is being designed as a living room experience, you know, with the Steam Big Picture mode, right? So, like,
I'm so tired of we're your entire living room. We're not just a
I know.
Ugh. I don't know. When they come out with a couch peripheral, that could be pretty awesome.
That is how Xbox 720 could win the console war before it starts. Come out with mouse and keyboard support.
Maybe. Full on. I think. And David, you might want to sit down for this. I think mouse and keyboard, at least in terms of like mainstream, might be on the way out. There will be games that continue to do.
I disagree. But.
So there are going to be experiences that you have to have mouse and keyboard in order to play. However, if you look at the preponderance of games that have been coming out, most of them are designed for console, and if they're not designed for console, gamepad control, specifically the Microsoft Xbox 360 controller, like that has been demanded by people. And it's been built into games by default. Whereas before, you know, you had to kind of like take, you know, kind of more extreme measures to get that kind of support built into something, which isn't a way of saying like, okay, at your desk, the computer that you have at your desk, if you still have the computer at your desk, I mean, come on, I mean, you know, phones, dog. but which isn't by way of saying that we're going to go full Minority Report and all you're going to need is your Kinect and your gamepad to play real, you know, real time strategy games. I think that's just my long winded way of saying I don't know that mouse and keyboard would come to something that Microsoft desperately wants to keep in the living room, because if that goes into the office where, you know, people are, then they don't have a reason to sell Windows licenses anymore.
See, I think I agree with you on your basic point. I would say, though, I think it's more in the same way that the Wii wasn't really in competition with the anything else, really. I think it's probably more likely that consoles and PC games PCs will increasingly become their own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
it's got to be one or the other, man. You got to choose. Pick a side, or you'll be the first against the wall.
Wow.
And by the way, when you say the Wii U became its own thing, you mean irrelevant, right?
Well, no, I just mean, you know, no one would ever really say, you know, oh, I don't need a. No one ever sat down and thought, you know, do I want to buy a, you know, Xbox or Wii. I feel like there were either people that – I feel like the vast majority of people that bought a Wii would have never bought an Xbox versus – and then the vast majority of people who buy an Xbox either A, would never have bought a Wii or were always going to buy both.
I agree with your premise. However, like especially for people who are informed, right? You just know if you want a Wii or not, or you know if you want an Xbox. However, the people that kind of the Wii got interested in video games, you know, would come into the GameStop where I worked, and they would ask, "Okay, so between the Wii and the Xbox 360, what would I get?" Like, sure. You know, people who aren't in, you know, who aren't self-identified people who play video games, because I hate the word gamers. But so the, you know, people who fall outside of that ballywick, as it were, and you would have to talk them through it and say, like, okay, well, what did you see? And then you just, you know, they would leave and they would come back and they would buy one or the other. So,
right.
You know, for the people, like, so I think the Wii just kind of came along as a catalyst that was like, okay, how do we get people interested in this thing again? And the Wii probably sold more Xboxes than maybe some of the stuff that the Xbox, you know, that Microsoft did with the Xbox. I might even argue that the Wii sold more Xboxes than the Kinect sold Xboxes.
Well, yeah. I guess what I'm more saying, maybe, I think, especially if you exclude like people who were just confused, I guess mostly what I'm saying is I don't think that the Wii and the Xbox are really in competition to near the degree people made out to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more divergent stuff. You know, probably to a large degree, you know, similar to like Mac and PC.
Yeah. You're dealing with two audiences that people self-select into.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
$1,000 sounds about right. It definitely falls away from the magic number of $499, but in fact, I would say it even doubles it. All right.
I'm not sure. That seems like a little bit of a bold claim.
The grind.
So during the grind section of this program, we talk about games that we are playing, games that we have played, and the games that we're going to talk about playing. I would ask if there is any new business to attend to.
I feel like you should do it right in Ben's absence.
What you been grinding on, Cole?
There we go.
Thank you for sparing me the embarrassment. So
as I'm here for you, man.
as I will talk about in the end boss here, I'm currently in the process of moving, which, as anybody who's done it knows, is an exhausting experience. That's kind of left me with not a lot of time to sink into doing new stuff. Although I broke my promise, I got a new game. I ordered Spec Ops on Amazon.
Good man.
Nice. Yes.
Good man.
Yeah, I know, right? So I've got it sitting here, still shrink wrapped. I'm on my PlayStation 3. I'm not going to talk about it because I haven't played it yet. I didn't want to drop Hitman so unceremoniously. So I got a little bit further in that. I'm still really liking it. The points where I was confounded earlier on a couple of specific missions, it was the result of this kind of seemingly paradoxical mix of being overcautious and not being observant enough.
Huh.
So I would be creeping around and kind of just, you know, focusing on not getting caught. And by way of that, I wouldn't actually like go towards the objective or even look for what the objective might be. It was the equivalent of like navigating a labyrinth by holding your right hand on the wall the entire time.
I mean, it's eventually effective.
Eventually, except there's a bunch of guards who want to kill you along the way. So it's better to just pick your path and then try multiple times to get through to it. Just like any frustration that I had was just due to me not paying enough attention to what I actually should have been doing. And, you know, maybe trying to get a little bit too precious with my approaches as opposed to, you know, trying to shy away from a quick and dirty kind of approach to it. Hitman, it is the defenestration simulator. Defenestration being defined as the act of throwing somebody out a window
Okay, I was going to say you're gonna have to give me a dictionary to
define your terms.
Oh yeah,
yes.
From it's yeah. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
Fenestra is that is I believe it's Italian for window.
I thought it was Polish.
Maybe. I'm not sure, but
I thought it was bullshit.
Suffice no, it is. It is. Fenestra is a word for window in some language, but
some language where they really like throwing people out of.
Yes, exactly.
So probably Italian.
Yeah, where they it's one of 20 words that the Italians have for throwing people out of windows. It's like Eskimos in snow. Which is actually pretty funny because the way that I played Assassin's Creed most of the time was as somebody who threw people off of roofs.
That's right, yeah.
See, that's funny. Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's funny because that actually directly relates to something I'm going to talk about in my thing. So
okay, that's cool. All right, I will let you know when to segue into that.
Okay, yeah. No, I realize.
I tell you what, I will artfully bring up throwing people out of windows at the end of the conversation as your cue to go again. How's that sound?
No, it's not that directly segue. I'm just saying it's funny that we're both going to end up talking about chucking people off of things.
so yeah, you know, played a handful more missions than that. It's still really good. I like the way that it looks, although the frame rate is kind of dog ass on the PlayStation 3, which I didn't quite expect. You know, in certain situations, it's not enough to affect it. It's not nearly as twitchy of a game, you know, that you would expect. But like in certain cinematics, it's a little kind of jumpy. It looks like you're looking at it through a kinetoscope. That would be my only complaint so far. Yeah.
Does it do a good job, with the, I guess it's supposed to emphasize, you know, a lot of verticality of the environment, stuff like that. Does it do a good job of communicating that?
Yeah, so far. You know, there's usually an alternate way that involves climbing up the side of a building or otherwise, you know, going over the situation as opposed to through it or under it or around it, which is pretty neat. I know that there are levels later that take more advantage of that. However, and one of the levels kind of earlier on, like, you know, you spend a good deal of time clinging to the outside of a building, trying to navigate your way around, which leads to plenty of opportunities for defenestration. yeah, so
I think we have an episode title.
Maybe. I'll jot it down.
Add it to the roster of potential candidates.
I also feel like that makes for, you know, the little image you have to go with the episode. There's got to be some awesome image you can get.
Yeah, that is potentially true. yeah, so like at work and in most of my interactions with people, I'm the word guy. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you know, Mr. Vocabulary, right? And it kind of comes across as like an affectation or like me trying to be smart. And they're kind of like, oh, use smaller words. We're dummies, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of like, it's not that I'm using like complicated words to try and like look or feel smarter. It's the most efficient way. I could say I chucked his ass out a window. Or I could say defenestration. There are elegant, simple words that say exactly what you mean, and you don't have to synthesize the thought.
Then it's again, not about using the biggest word. It's about using the best word.
Yes. And I know people are out there, you know, slamming against their steering wheel saying, language is about communication. If people don't understand you, there's no point.
But, well, there's that.
They're,
to those people, I will chuck them out of a window.
Yeah. So,
as a side note, it was the Czech Republic.
Okay, cool. so yeah. I haven't played much else besides that. I could talk about have I talked about Surgeon Simulator 2012?
No,
but that sounds awesome.
So did either of you guys play Quap?
Yes.
What?
Quap.
No.
It is a game where you are a runner, not BitTrip Runner, not BitTrip Presents Runner 2, but like you are like an Olympic runner, and you have control only over his right thigh, left thigh, right calf, and left calf.
Yeah.
And they say it's hardly Olympic.
Well, yeah, yeah. oftentimes victory is achieved by crawling, by just like if his head hits the ground, then the game is over. The object is to run 100 meters, but it's the most awkward, crazy experience ever. It's a couple years old, so I'm not entirely sure that it's, you know, relevant at this point. However, Surgeon Simulator 2012, takes that same principle where you are a surgeon, you have control over one hand, your four keys, manipulate the fingers, or five keys rather, the pinky, ring finger, middle finger, index finger, and thumb. Pressing that causes
those. Oh, those are flex. My fingers.
Yes, those ones. And your mouse controls the arm, right? And you can actually control the rotation of the arm as well. And the idea is you've got somebody with an open chest cavity, and you have a tray of instruments to your right. And you have to remove the lungs and the heart and put the new heart in and put the lungs back in. That might not be the goal. I've never achieved it because
did it actually read the medical report? I just guessed.
Is there a medical equivalent of being disbarred?
He was there for a rhinoplasty.
Yeah, but like there's a glass that you can knock over, and most of the time I ended up knocking the heart off the tray, stuff like that.
So it instantly became like Airplane.
Yeah, pretty much. Like you can like leave a bunch of stuff inside the chest cavity and still win. It's super goofy. There's a new one. Surgeon Simulator 2013 was just announced. It's going to be brain surgery. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. So I've been playing around with that at work occasionally, and it's just as batshit as you'd expect.
See, I think my favorite part of this is it's an ironclad rule that anytime there's a simulation video game, sooner or later I will hear an NPR story about how someone saved someone's life using what they learned from the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is entirely possible. But more likely the person's widow will try and throw you out of a window, which I believe raises a point that you had, David.
See, like I say, I'm not sure I can transition that. Well,
you were plenty willing to interrupt me before, so.
No, I wasn't interrupting you. I was just saying it was funny.
M chicken's coming home to roost, son.
Oh, I see how it is. Why don't you just chuck me out of a window next time?
That's how you solve most of your problems. Runs out of the room sobbing.
Where I was semi-going with that, had a Steam sale set up and come up, and although I was, planning on saving money and not buying any more games for a while, I threw responsibility out of the window and ended up getting Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, yeah, that's the the true crime Hong Kong, right?
Right, which is relevant because I'm highly disappointed about it so far. Because, it has a really good, combat simulator. It's they collaborated with the people that did Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, the Rocksteady, they went with their combat system.
Yeah,
guys.
Yeah. And so it works really well. They've got a, really good system where, you can grapple with people and then, run them into various environmental hazards. Mm-hmm. The only thing I find incredibly annoying is that your character is apparently morally opposed to defenestration.
By which you mean shooting people.
Yes. No. No. Because, apparently, you can, shove someone's head into a the whirling blades of an air conditioning unit or, dump someone in a dumpster or... electrocute them in a circuit breaker. But if you try to simply chuck them over a railing or off the window, you used to do it.
Huh.
So
you have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah, let's be honest. I mean, you're a cop, so. But no,
he's waiting. He can't think of any really good one-liners for defenestration.
I really regret entering that word into the lexicon. I am so I am so sorry, listeners.
We need a counter.
Oh God, I'm not going to edit that in. You can feel free, but feel free to count along at home. But yeah, so they limit your combat.
Yeah, no, really, it's actually the combat's really good. Very realistic. The only true problem I found is that if you're chasing someone, you don't seem to be able to. Whenever you do an attack, you stop moving.
Yeah.
So even if it's like a jumping kick that you would think you'd just kind of flying kick into them, which is real annoying when, like, you know, finally pick up a meat cleaver off the ground right as, you know, someone, you know, does a purse snatching next to me. I go chasing after them and I can't meat cleaver them. I mean, what are they thinking?
Weird.
But really good game, good voice acting so far. I like that a lot of the dialogue's in Cantonese.
Oh, cool.
Which is kind of cool.
Nice.
I do feel like you could probably do a lot of, you know, social analysis though on this game. You know, for a game that's, you know, set in Hong Kong where, you know, almost all of the characters in it are Chinese. Why is the love interest a white American girl? You know, stuff like that. But I think it's more just what the story is.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
Ultimately, what it comes down to, though, is that, you know, throwing people into phone booths and kicking them up against pop machines never gets old.
Well, yeah. You take their lunch money.
Exactly.
Yeah. Neat. Yeah. Open world games. Last one I played was Saints Row the 3. Oh, the 3rd, rather. Isn't that right, Dennis?
You know what? I am virtually convinced. I know I had that game set out. My working theory is that you saw it out, you tucked it away, and that's why I can't find it now. You've actually taken it and left me eternally damned to search for it in my own house.
Well, see, what I should do is I should buy 3 copies of Saints Row the 3rd, label them 1, 2, and 4, and then distribute them in your house and say, no, mine was labeled 3, Dennis. Then you'd say, take number 4, please. No, it's Saints Row the 3rd.
It's around here somewhere.
Okay. The backstory on that is that Dennis came over for my first housewarming party last year, and he got me nice and liquored up, and he said, hey, I'd like to borrow this. You also have my original Silent Hill. You son of a bitch!
That one is in good hands, though. That one I've got.
Yes, Daryl down the street. Sorry.
They teach you a lesson about loaning me stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, it was more kind of a forced. I stole it. I'm sorry. I stole it. It's not mince. We talk about using the best word.
I done stole it.
Let's be honest. For Saints Row, is entirely appropriate.
It's thematically appropriate at least. David, did you play anything else?
Still playing EVE Online. Still a really great game, but I think I go back to my previous statement that the biggest problem it has is that they've got an amazing economic system, an amazing crafting system, an amazing interface, an amazing skill system. They just kind of forgot the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. That, like, whenever I think about EVE Online, all that I can think of is on GOG they put out Freelancer, and it runs on Mac, and I haven't bought and played it yet. And that means that although I am intrigued by the idea of a space travel game or a space fighter game, something like that, like I couldn't play a single player one, let alone, or I can't bring myself to play a single player one, let alone one that is massively multiplayer.
Yeah. See, I think the advantage EVE has is just it's incredibly complex just in terms of, you know, all the different ways you can control your ship in terms of, you know, there's just tons and tons of, you know, in-depth strategies you can do and, you know, how you fly. And yeah, I think it's a game that runs entirely on meta.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Is the Goon Swarm, is that nearly as bad as people say it is, or are they nearly as prolific on there as everybody says? Because I've read stories of their antics, and quite frankly, for somebody who's not really interested in the game, they sound hilarious.
I would actually say the other way around. They're kind of assholes.
Okay.
You know, the problem with it is that the way they play doesn't fit in with the game. You know, the game's made to be, you know, Ayn Rand in space, you know, ultra, you know, laissez-faire, stuff like that. But the problem with it is they're big enough that the checks and balances that would make someone behave in anything relating to how a rational person would behave in real life don't work. And so, like, the most recent thing they did, I got into corporate chat, and apparently their high security space is basically areas where if PvP happens, the game's equivalent of the police will come and kill you.
Okay.
To the point where, like, and they're very good at it, escaping from them is considered exploitation.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So, basically they're going into high sec space, finding people running missions and killing them, which is much more of a problem in a game where you have to buy your ship when you die.
Right, right.
So I'll be honest, I tend to think there's a special place in hell for people that grief in games, but
okay.
I was actually debating that being my level boss with my dislike of griefers, but I almost feel like griefing a game, I feel like it's almost worse than being an asshole in real life. Because in real life, I feel like the core personality flaw that causes you to have fun by hurting someone else is still there. The only difference is in real life there's a consequence. So not only are you, at least for the people that truly, you know, get off on, you know, making people have a bad time, not only are you an awful person, you're also a coward. But that is my entirely emotional dislike of Goon Squad.
So. Okay. Would you like to give your EVE Online name to all of the goons who listen?
Yes. You realize that most of our audience are people from Something Awful.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Something Awful. I just don't like the way like what Goon Squad does.
I can understand that.
I mean,
Goon Fleet, not Goon Squad. Goon Squad are the...
I think it's Goon Squad now.
Oh, really?
Or there's different things.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Goon Swarm? Swarm?
Yeah, Goon Swarm.
Yeah, the fleet formerly known as Goon.
I just don't like the whole, you know, playing the game by keeping other people from playing the game. I don't know. I just don't like that.
I don't know. It is a bigger discussion than we can have here, I think. So
we should take it to a comment section.
Yes, we should. To the internet. So I would.
I don't think I know that many curse words.
You just make them up. If you, it's like Beetlejuice. If you say it three times, it becomes real.
Yes.
Enough capitalization.
Enough capitalization that it becomes a thing. Capital A, capital T. So, Dennis, I want to hear what you've been playing.
Yeah, well, now I can't talk that much about what I've been playing, because I've been playing Spec Ops: The Line, and I don't want to ruin anything for you.
I mean, you can talk in general, so you don't have to.
Yeah, I sat down and did some thinking before the episode because I was like, you know, I really want to rant and rave about how amazing this game is.
Well, you'll have a chance. You know that, right?
Yeah, this is definitely bonus level material. If I'm picking up what you're laying down,
yeah.
Anyway, so I think I'll keep my comments on it brief, but you and everyone else listening should take away that you should absolutely go play this game. It is worth your time if you have any interest in this medium or in good things in general. Like, just wow. It's a masterpiece. I guess I would couch my comments now that I know that you've got the game as like advice I would give you going into it. So the first thing I would say is you're going to be tempted to binge on this game and like take it in one fell swoop. And I would say give yourself a little bit of space. It's a relatively short game. I think all told, I beat it in three sittings. They were long sittings, but you know, I beat it in three sittings. But that space in between playing, I think, was invaluable.
Right.
And it's actually, it kind of triggered a thought or a realization on another way that video games are an artistic medium that is different and in some ways more powerful than any other medium you can experience. Without going into detail, I've been in a class where we're talking about kind of unlearning some of the ways that Western thinking has really influenced us. And one of the big ways is that, you know, our approach towards learning things. And in the Western way of thinking, like, you put knowledge in your head, you tell someone something and then they know it. Whereas in kind of the other way of thinking is that, you know, hearing something once doesn't mean anything. That really kind of the Eastern way of thinking, for just to use the word contrasting it, is that you really need to kind of steep in it, stew in it, repeat it. It's a slow process and it's a repetitive process. And especially for a game that has something to say, and Spec Ops Line definitely does, that the medium lends itself to that kind of just stewing in something for a couple weeks as you experience it.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to take your time with the game, and the time you spend in between play sessions will be as valuable as the time you spend playing the game.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's the way I play games in general, is like, yeah, little bits at a time. You guys know this. So I don't know if that's too much of a concern. Like, would you say beating it over the course of a week would be too quick?
No, that's about how long I took to beat it.
Yeah.
Well, because it's only like 6 hours, right?
Yeah, I think I don't know if there's a play clock, but I probably put 6 to 7 hours into the game.
I've heard eight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It depends on how good you are at video games.
Noob. Yeah.
that brings up the mechanics. The one, it's not even a knock I've heard against the game, is that the shooting mechanics can be a little bit off. I've heard people argue that that's actually intentional, plays into part of what the game is trying to do. In general, I don't know that I subscribe to that, but I also didn't find the mechanics that offensive. Any weapon with a scope is a little wonky. Like, I could never feel effective with that, but with your general, you know, medium to close range weapons, I never had any trouble. And the shooting felt pretty good to me. Especially like just kind of the variety of ways, hip firing, blind firing, aim down the scope, all that stuff. Yeah. Jesus. I'm trying to, I don't know that there's any of that in this game. Although don't quote me on that. but you know, so the shooting worked well at medium to close range, and also just kind of a variety of tactical approaches. You know, there were times where it worked really well for me to blind fire my entire clip while screaming at the television.
Okay. Not your character screaming, but you.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, screaming.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I certainly wouldn't complain about it, and I'm not really sure what other people who are kind of knocking that shooting are complaining about, except that it's not Call of Duty, which if you're complaining about that, then you've completely missed the point.
Right.
the other thing I'll say is pay attention to all the details. So not just like the in-world stuff while you're playing, but everything from like the menu, the title screen, the credits, everything about the game is oriented towards conveying its message and is incredibly well thought out and intentional. So just because you died, don't check out and wait for the game to reload you. Watch what's happening in between, because it is meaningful and it will change your experience.
Okay.
So, and sorry for anyone, if you haven't heard of this game, I know it went kind of under the radar for me for a long time. It's a third-person shooter that's all I want to say about it right now. It's it is freaking amazing, and you will hear much more about it. But man, it's just, after playing it, I fully intend to buy the downloadable content. I got it free through PlayStation Plus. I don't know that I'll ever touch the multiplayer mode, but I'm going to buy the downloadable content for it just because I think they deserve my money.
You're right.
And I will. I did a search and found the previous games they've done, and I'm following them on Twitter now for the unnamed title they have in development. It's Jaeger Development is the name of the developers.
Right.
Develop. And it's just, man, they've done something really good here, and they certainly changed, just gave me an experience that like changed the way I thought about stuff. And wow, I feel like I'm not making any sense now, but for those of you, it, by the way, huge thanks to Sam Anderson, friend of the show, who I think posted on our Facebook wall about how great this game was and kind of got me over the edge to actually try it. So yeah, it's go ahead.
I think his post was something along the lines of "Get this."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'll leave, because, like I said, I'm positive we'll do a bonus level on this at some point.
Yeah.
Just what a great game.
I don't want to jinx it by like putting a timestamp on anything, but like I imagine that I will have an opportunity to like really digest this and get together a record, you know, a special recording session like mid-April, let's say, so like a month from now. Yeah. And I know who I want to participate in it, so we will continue from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm debating right now whether I want to go straight back into it and play another round, just kind of knowing the full story and kind of being able to watch, you know, all this stuff again, or if, like I said, I want to give it some time to sit and think and then go back through it. So,
right.
We'll see. But holy crap. The other game I've been playing. Well, first, any other questions? Like I said, I don't want to do too much on it, because I know that Cole, you're going to play it, and David, you should at some point play it if you haven't already.
Yeah, like, you know, any questions that I would ask would, you know, kind of tip my hand in knowing what the moral of the story is. Like, I would want to ask you how effective you know it is, because in a lot of ways the game has been ruined for me, just a little bit, not in particulars, but you know, just knowing it. But I think that might be a bit too much to get in. It might be out of scope for this conversation.
What? Sorry.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I'll say, again, thinking about how video games can give you an experience that's different than any other medium, a movie can, you know, create a very difficult moral situation, or can just create a complicated situation that's making a statement. But it will always tell you the answer.
Right.
Like, at the end of the day, you are watching someone else's statement of how this should play out, or how it did play out, or, you know, it's not in your control. Gaming in general, and specifically Spec Ops: The Line, does a great job of setting up those same situations and then asking you how it should play out. And that's, again, that's something that you can't get in any other medium. So, right. Yeah.
So does it use explicit more choices, or is it more just, you know, you're playing the game and obviously you're doing things and making decisions?
No, there is no morality system in the game. And well, I was actually... Oh, go ahead.
When I say more choices, I mean, does it explicitly say, do you do this or do you do this? Or is it more just you're playing and whatever you do as you're playing?
A mix of both. So there are definitely points where you are asked to make a moral choice. I would say they do a very good job of making it not a binary choice. So there, I've been very pleasantly surprised with how well some of my decisions have, well or not well, but how thought out some of my decisions have played out. Like, you know, I've chosen to make a decision in a moral situation that I thought was off the wall, or like, okay, this is clearly not one of the two obvious paths that's been laid out in front of me. And it's clear that the developers thought, hey, people might be inclined to do X, Y, or Z. Here's how, you know, here's how this would probably play out if you did that. So, but I digress. It's we'll spend plenty of time talking about it, I'm sure. Go get this game. Go play this game. It's you owe it to yourself. It's you will be just better for it.
Just treat yourself.
Yeah, you know, maybe put some rose petals on the couch. I'm not. Yeah. Gosh, and
put some rose petals on the couch and then play a soul-crushing game about the morality of war.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're turned on by this game, something is deeply, deeply wrong. But yeah, so also, if you're turned on by this next game, something is deeply, deeply wrong, because I've also been playing Penumbra Overture.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Sexy spiders.
Yeah, if you have any level of arachnophobia, this game...
is it? Because that's actually what I've been holding off on getting it. Does it play up the arachnophobia stuff?
I can't speak for the whole game, but at least a prominent early section of the game, holy crap, yes.
Yeah.
That said, the game does a better job than I've ever seen of making you scared of something without seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nothing actually happens in the time I've spent playing the game. I have walked around in the dark and heard noises, and it has frightened me. I made the mistake of playing this game in bed with Jen there, and I had my headphones in. She goes, "What the hell are you doing? You keep on jumping.
Nothing's happening on screen. Are you okay?"
Yeah. Well, it's the old TV tropes, you know, nothing is scarier.
Yes,
you
know, exactly. Not much has happened, but it's been incredibly frightening when it doesn't happen or something. It kind of follows the same horror game trope, I guess, that sort of kind of clumsy controls work really well for it. So they do this thing where, you know, a hand icon pops up over anything that you can interact with, and then you actually click and move your mouse as if it were your hand to interact. So that's the way you open doors, and that's the way you, drag stuff around and all that. Which is really clumsy, and a lot of times it's not intuitive. Like, for some of the puzzle elements, I found that the puzzle wasn't figuring out how to do it. The puzzle was figuring out which direction I actually needed to drag the mouse in 2D space to make what I wanted to happen in 3D space happen. It's clumsy, but at the same time, you know, when you've got a hammer and it's really the only thing that resembles a weapon, and to swing it, you have to click and drag your mouse back and forth.
Then every spider looks like a nail.
Yeah.
I'm going to suggest that as a title.
I can't argue with that at all.
I kind of like that.
You're on fire with the titles, David.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, like, you know, to actually attempt any kind of combat like that is is really panic-inducing.
Yeah.
So not good controls, but certainly effective for what the game is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Is it similar at all? A lot of this stuff I was reading in the reviews remind me a lot of the Call of Cthulhu game, where you have to open everything manually, and you know it sounded like they did a lot with that to make chases and stuff like that more tense.
I'll field this one, Dennis.
Yeah, because you've experienced more than I have.
It's it's manual to the nth degree, like more than Call of Cthulhu. Like Call of Cthulhu, you were still you were still like pressing a button and the thing would open. This is literally you are dragging the drawer open the entire way. It was designed actually with the Novant Falcon in mind. You know that thing that looks like the portal gun where you hold onto the orb and then it provides resistance.
Yeah.
Like so, like you know, it's a physics, you know, game to a certain extent, right?
Okay.
Call of Cthulhu, at least the Dark Corners of the Earth, has more of a built-in combat focus. Like you know, there are guns and things. Yeah. You know, even if it does, you know, does leverage stealth. And whereas some of the best moments in Call of Cthulhu were about pursuit. It wasn't necessarily the main focus of the game.
You know,
it was more stealth. And then later on, a certain level of combat, whereas everything that this developer has done, the Penumbra series and also Amnesia is entirely focused around pursuit, you know, chasing and kind of avoiding, detection. Right. To the point where I would say I'm actually, you know, having kind of played both, I need to go back and play through Penumbra again, actually, because I got like a good portion of the way through it. And then I lost my save due to some kind of voodoo here or there. So I'd have to go, you know, it's not like it's a chore. It's an excellent game. But I was really happy, you know, maybe having played Amnesia first, that they kind of, you know, took the combat out of it. Because combat really isn't anything that you want to rely on in Penumbra.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even having it there means that there are situations where they kind of need to design around that being a possibility.
The one time I have attempted any kind of combat was not by choice, and it resulted in my death very decisively. So,
yeah.
and me swinging my mouse back and forth, trying to get the hammer to go and screaming, ah, this is a trend. I need to fix this.
See, that for me, usually not having combat game is a turnoff for me just because it seems to me that that's where a lot of horror comes from and, you know, a lot of the point of fear is that I don't know.
I think the tension of the decision to fight or flight. I don't think that's a grammatically correct sentence, but that can add a lot of tension to a game.
Exactly.
Whereas you know, but it's also possibly to do a pure fight game very well, which I think is the majority of games. And I think Penumbra shows that. You can also do a pure flight game very well.
Oh yeah, I think everyone agrees that all the reviews I've read have said, you know, these are some of the greatest, you know, survival horror games of all time.
I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, the one final thought I'll have, or I'll throw out there, is that it's incredibly well written. There's not really any dialogue in it, but. There is, you know, you find notes and stuff like that, and just the writing in that is really, really good. And I think you can kind of feel from the writing that it comes from a small team. Like there's just a level of focus, and it's got a strong enough voice that it feels like it comes from a small focused source rather than from some big development company.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's, you know, I won't say it's not possible to get that feel from a larger game, but I think that at least for the writing, being a small studio doing this served them well.
Yeah, it's very much an intimate experience.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
Yeah. Oh, man, horror games, right? Like, if you're like me and you're a nerd to anything that happens around you and life is but just a... but just... a numb wandering on a cold and desolate shore. Horror games, it's, you know, one of the most effective ways, you know, to experience media and just be like, you can feel the designer say, I am making this thing specifically to grab a hold of your brainstem and yank it.
Yeah.
And that's why I like horror games a lot.
See, that's a genre I've been meaning to get into. It's just, you know, like I said, one, I'm afraid of the dark. Like, that's a thing. I strongly dislike that stuff, and I'm not a huge fan of not combat. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's something I've been meaning to get into, because obviously it's a genre that has a lot of, you know, great entries in it.
Yeah.
But
yep. Any final thoughts on that, Dennis?
No, I'll continue kind of plunking away at it.
Cool.
Sneaking and cringing away at it.
I need to
sneak.
Go ahead.
One just sound design thing that's really, really cool. I don't know if they do this in Amnesia as well, but like when you're crouched and hiding for a bit and not moving, and then you finally move again, you do you like hear yourself breathe.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's completely quiet. And then the second you decide to move, it's like, yeah. And you realize, and it's like, it perfectly mirrors. Like I've done that where I've been so scared that I've realized suddenly that I'm holding my breath.
Yeah.
Like so, so perfect. So not really connected to anything, just a cool little tidbit.
I need to edit the Wikipedia page for Defenestration because the in literature section doesn't reference the beginning of Watchmen.
The end boss.
So time for the end bosses, where we leave something for everybody to chew on over the course of the next week until we come back anew. So does anybody want to go, or should I?
Why don't you kick us off?
Yeah. So as I said, I've been moving, boxing my stuff up and everything. I'm really excited because I'm going to a better neighborhood. That's kind of boring, though. I just have a bit of an anecdote about. So you guys have been to my place. You know that I'm a very neat person, but I like my things, right?
Yeah.
I accumulate. I have shelves. I have shelves. I have books. But in packing stuff up, I kind of realized, you know, maybe it might be time to, you know, to like at least get rid of the DVDs because I haven't watched a DVD in like, you know, 3 years. All of my stuff happens online digitally. This stuff is just taking up a shelf in my bookshelf. I can maybe get a couple bucks for it. Same thing with a bunch of these old fantasy novels that I haven't touched since like middle school. I have a couple that are, you know, of sentimental value, and I've kept those. But, you know, I filled up an entire IKEA blue bag, and I took it to Half Price Books. And it wasn't until I got there and, like, started to hand it over that I realized the only difference between a hoard and a collection is a shelf. Because, like...
Title. Sorry.
I was sweating, and my hand was shaking, and it was like... I haven't touched this stuff for a couple of years. It has no place in my home. It doesn't make my life better by being there. It just like I've moved it from, you know, like 5 different places. Like it should just be gone. You know, I shouldn't have this in my life anymore. And when they told me, oh, we'll give you $30 for it, I was like, that's $30 you didn't have before. That's 2 shelves that are empty, right? There's nothing bad about this. If you want any of those books, you can buy them on Kindle. It'll be fine. You have money. If you want any of those movies, you can rent them on Amazon and watch them. Like you've watched them a million times, but still I was sweating and shaking and I was looking for every reason not to sell it. And I eventually did. And I was like sick for the rest of the day as I was getting back and boxing more things up.
Huh.
I don't know if I'm confessing to some deep imbalance, but like that really threw me off. Like I didn't expect to be so affected by getting rid of some DVDs or books, but yeah, that has been my adventure in moving.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Well, I feel like a lot of times, I don't know if this is, you know, for you, but they're almost trophies depending on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the majority of the books that I own, you know, I just turned and looked at a shelf that was mostly empty. I've read all of them, right? They're just because I like having them. They're not reference books. Like, you know, I don't need this copy of The Stand. I've read The Stand, but I like having it.
Well, and also though, I mean, you know, I've said, you know, I keep meaning to read The Stand because it's referenced all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, there's certain books I keep to show that I am cultured. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. But these weren't cultured. These were like R.A. Salvatore.
Hey, Driss was a classy, classy man.
He was a classy, classy archetype. Yes. No, just, but like, the time had come to move on. I don't even really read fantasy anymore. So it gets hairy. It gets tricky, but it's, you know, less stuff I have to move and all that stuff before. Same thing with games. Like if I were to like load up all my games and take them to a GameStop, I think that like you would need to like, you would find me like two towns over, like as a John Doe in a hospital, drooling, like rocking in the corner. Like it would be that shattering. I don't know. He just walked off.
Yeah. No, just think though, those are only your old games back before you know, when college and stuff, when you beat all your games. Imagine once you start getting into your backlog.
Oh, that's not a fair appraisal of the situation. So, who wants to go next?
I have something completely and entirely trivial.
Okay.
I would like to make the assertion that chicken fingers are superior to chicken patties, because even if you want to make a sandwich, you can make a sandwich out of chicken fingers. However, chicken patties are not, will never be a finger food.
that is true. You always need a fork, at least to eat a chicken patty, right?
Right, exactly.
I think chicken patties
probably a knife too.
Chicken patties are decidedly more white trash though, I think.
True.
Which isn't a bad thing in and of itself. I've eaten my fair share of
chicken.
There's anything wrong with being a hick who doesn't know about nutrition. I've eaten my fair share of chicken patties, right? That's a thing. I think that like chicken fingers, they have a benefit in that you can make a wrap out of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
My go-to if I'm in a hurry and I have to do fast food is to go to Wendy's and get the spicy chicken go wrap with no ranch.
Yeah.
That is that I think is a good that is a solid creation.
So I feel like the wrap I think it officially needs to be, it's the sandwich of the future.
the sandwich of the future will come in pill form. You realize this?
Well, true. But you watch all these movies where it's science fiction, but just a little bit,
yeah.
And so they always have to find like some subtle way. So I think what needs to be is sandwiches are now wraps. We're too on the go, to eat a sandwich anymore.
Yeah. If I had bought bread any time in the past 6 months, I would probably be more prone to like make sandwiches out of stuff. But I always have tortillas on hand.
Exactly.
Especially corn tortillas; those are delicious. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I agree with your assertion, even though chicken patties have a certain place in my heart, quite literally, possibly.
You might want to have that looked at.
Yeah. No, from high school, because that was the if you did the a la carte lunch, you either had the chicken patties or the pizza.
From high school cafeteria pizza.
Well, everybody knows that it's a shingle. Yeah. Yeah, the chicken patty and the literal tray full of fries. What are we doing to our kids? Okay. Continuing, Dennis.
My just thought is I feel like I've gotten to play a couple really, really good games right in sequence with, Penumbra, with Spec Ops The Line, and and listening to you guys talk about it, I feel like my thought is we should start kind of expecting more from the games we play. Go for entertainment and stuff, but also kind of give thought to, so what is the game saying or what is the game asking me to think? And what is my reaction to that? And if you don't find that, that kind of, intentionality there, I don't know if that's an actual word. But, we should start kind of expecting that instead of being pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah.
That kind of goes back to the God of War thing almost, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things like, is this action enriching my life in some way? Which it's it depends on your definition of enrich, because there are still people out there who would say you're wasting your time when you play it. But I'm stealing this thought wholesale from you know, for From Video Games Hot Dog at this point. Zach made an, you know, an excellent point, which is he's constructed his life in such a way. And I think a lot of us have, in that the things that we do for fun also contribute to like what we are and, you know, who we think we are.
Yeah.
So there's not an awful lot of like, we're going to watch House Hunters all day. Right. Like in any of our lives, I think we don't do an awful lot of like junk food media consumption. Right.
Yeah. Right. Although, and it, well, please, this show is already pretentious enough. I have nothing about against no. coming home from a long day at work and, you know, turning something mindless on and you know, fragging some polygons. That's,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
But that's the place.
But even then, if you frag some polygons, that contributes directly to not only your hobby of playing video games, but coming back here and talking about them.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so that's the thing. It's just you redefine what you take away from it, and you know, more to your point, then we can start expecting stuff, I think, just because there are enough positive examples that exist.
And you know, you've kind of touched on this actually some with Spec Ops, but you know, video games are uniquely experiential, so I think they're more meaningful than. Than maybe some other media would tend to be.
Yeah. It's definitely a different experience.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Hmm. So anyway, there's the thing. Do you guys want to button it up?
Let's do it.
All right. The credit. That was episode number 15 of The Level, or as I usually say in the proper nomenclature of this, excuse me. Level 15. I'm not going to edit that out because I'd rather my choking death be posthumously aired. I'm going to take a drink of my seltzer, actually. Seltzer. Soda water.
How is that different than tonic water?
Tonic water has quinine and often a sweetener in it.
Okay.
Which it's also different than club soda, which is gross. So anyway, so there are some things that you can, if you are kind enough, do. Of course, continue listening. Of course, contribute. Oftentimes, we have a segment called multiplayer. We didn't this week due to my negligence, but that'll be fixed here. Hopefully, I hope that I can make that promise to you. But you can like us on Facebook, where we have discussion that happens all the time, and we thank you for that. That often informs the discussion that we have here. Gives us some springing off points to go for, just be there to see the announcements and things. You know, you can also leave us a rating or review on iTunes. That definitely helps us out, makes us more visible. It gets us on the featured list, gets us on the ratings. It's all about getting more people to listen to this. You know, even if you aren't a person who likes iTunes, that's where the majority of our traffic comes from. So you're out there, do a thing. If you would like to support the network kind of like directly, you can go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar. If you're going to buy stuff on Amazon, just click that, add the things to your cart, and then check out. That helps. And here's kind of a big thing. You know, I've been asking for kind of merch ideas for a while. And it's, I've been ruminating on that, trying to think of like, what can we do for a tribute? However, kind of like as a network-wide thing, we're going to start doing print-on-demand t-shirts. Through a third-party supplier, which means that we can have many more designs than if we took like pre-orders. And you know, like, okay, what are you going to get? You pay us up front, we send them out, blah blah blah. This is done through a fulfillment. So what that means for you is that if you would like to suggest a design or an idea for the level-based T-shirt, we are 100% open to that, and it would be trivially easy for us to pop it up on the store and make it worth your while to purchase. So get in contact with us and let you know. I have a couple of ideas, most of them revolving around general puzzles.
yes.
But if there are any bits or stuff like that you like, that you think would be t-shirtable moments, then we would be happy to add that. And that's going to happen across the network for all shows. So get in on the things that you are going to put on your body. Or maybe you would hopefully put on your body. So is there anything that I'm missing, fellas?
Check out the other shows on the network. You mentioned the duckfeed.tv network.
Yes, that is where we are at.
The pod people.
The pod people. one of us. Yes, we are pod people. We do shows. Bunches of them are about video games. Watch out for Fireballs and Bonfireside Chat. We also have some general purpose comedy ones like Those Damn Ross Kids, The Pitch, which you are in for a treat on these new pitches.
That makes my day.
Yeah, and I've been listening to those more regularly now, and it's just I'm on the New Year's Eve party. Oh my god!
See, not to show how much of a nerd I am, but the one that registered for me, I've been working on schematics of how to make a Pepsi. Excuse me.
Did you see the fan video that somebody did of
yes, that
of
made
Coke Fuck You?
That was amazing.
That was yeah for real. It's so good. You should check for real. Go for it. Download
just
them all. Listen to them at a gasp.
Else, what's if that? Nothing else, go in and read the episode titles.
Yes,
they're getting so long that they're actually breaking Squarespace. And the new ones are no exception. Oh man,
best title so far though, The Pleasure Throw.
Not
what you would think.
I don't even know. So with that, with our hearty entreaty for you to go and listen to all of The Pitch, hosted by our colleagues Gary Butterfield and Braden Cameron, we bid you adieu. My name is Cole Ross. You can follow me at Cole Ross on Twitter, KOLEROSS.
I am at DFuria, DFURIA.
I'm David Moneysmith.
And?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm at MoneySmith777.
There we go.
I do my Twitter handle, but not my name. He does his name, but not his Twitter handle.
It's not like we've done this like 14 times.
Well, to be honest, I think I've done exactly one tweet.
Yeah. Oh, so you're sub Merkel.
Yes.
Sub Merkel.
Sub Merkel.
A submerkable? What? I don't even know. I had fun doing this. We'll see you next week.
Good stuff.
Sorry, I just finished that. Not yesterday. What is time anymore? Yesterday, I think. Maybe Sunday. I don't know.
Was it a satisfying end?
Yes.
Not to give away any spoilers about how
this wouldn't go in the show.
Okay.
What is this?
The Watchmen?
Okay. Yeah.
So I hadn't read it before. I've never seen the movie. I intend to watch the movie. Have you read or seen it, David?
I've only seen it. I've not read it. So I know most of. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, Ozymandias, he was engineering the entire thing to save the world from its assured destruction by introducing this. From what I understand, they took away this part from the comic book for the movie. But like in the comic book, he like engineers this gigantic squid-looking alien,
in order
to stage and like get both sides of the Cold War to be like, yeah, we should probably call off because there are these extra threats around here, and that whole like, oh, I did it 35 minutes ago, that was like an oh shit from a moment, because like, wait a minute, are they actually? And then that entire last issue, just like holy crap, 3 million people in New York are dead, and am I supposed to sympathize with him because he averted so and so? And I've gone back and forth out of conversation with Gary. I was just kind of like, yeah, man, the ending to Watchmen, that was just kind of like a real punch in the gut, just about like how futile everything is. It's like, no, you're looking at it all wrong, because you have to look at it from, from Dan and Laurie's perspective, Night Owl and the Silk Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
Because they got their happy ending. Basically everybody got a happy ending except for Rorschach.
Rorschach.
I turn into a dog every time I try and say that.
more or less my worldview. So I look at it from his perspective.
From Rorschach's perspective? Or Ozymandias's?
For the most part. Not so much the craziness, but I mean, for the most part, I tend to believe in, you know, black and white, that morality is black and white.
Right. So you know, I was just kind of like, I looked at Rorschach as, you know, like, you know, the inadvertent hero, because for as obsessive as he was still going to do what he thought was the right thing.
Right.
But then, you know, I thought about, like, wait a minute, because in the book, like, you see some of his childhood, like, papers, and he's talking about, like, how he thinks, like, as, you know, as a kid, he thought that the attack on Hiroshima was justified for the exact same reason that Ozymandias justified killing all those people in New York. And it's kind of like, wait a minute, go ahead.
As a side note, the attack... Sorry, this is just a pet peeve. The attack in Hiroshima is incredibly, incredibly more complex than the vast majority of people make it out to
be. Yes, yes. Oh, I'm for sure, but just kind of like, as that kind of thing. So you could just, you might be able to argue that, you know, Rorschach knew that his thing was going to be published anyway. And by the, you know, by that point, by the time they submitted it, he'd already, you know, damned Veidt. You know, by sending that into the crazy right-wing, you know, newspaper. And, you know, Dr. Manhattan, before
Fox
he says,
News.
What's that?
Sorry.
Yeah, Fox News.
I said Fox News.
and before Dr. Manhattan took off, you know, he was like, you know, you're crazy to think that anything ends Ozymandias. And if you even just, like, look at what, you know, Ozymandias is based off of, look upon my works, ye mighty, right? Like that whole thing. It's kind of like the no matter what he does, we're still going to find a way to, you know, to wipe out the planet. So, you know, maybe that sacrifice wasn't justified. So who knows if the end justified the means in terms of the utopia that he brought everybody. But I did, right. I did like that Dan and Laurie got a good ending. They were consistently the most likable characters in the entire thing.
See, yeah. I'll be honest to see. I want to read the actual, I guess, book. And I'd be interested to see when you see the movie, because everything I've read about the two, the differences, stuff like that, it sounds to me like the movie's actually a better story. Everything I've read suggests that the thing is that the movie dramatically less takes sides.
Well, I think they try to do the same thing with significantly less giant squid.
Yeah.
Well, there's also that, but it seems like, again, this is just, you know, what I've read about both. It sounds like in the book, the book more has a message, whereas the movie more... kind of like Spec Ops presents a situation and then expects you to find the message.
I think the book did that, though.
Does it? Okay. Yeah. I've never.
Like, I mean, just like look at two, you know, two people had a, you know, had, you know, wildly different opinions based on, you know, which character they ended up sympathizing with.
Okay. Maybe.
So I'd say it's definitely more textured. Than maybe you're making it out to be. That said, I haven't watched the movie. I would definitely recommend reading the novel. Like, you can get it for $10 on the Rainforest.
I'm gonna have to track it down. It's now past the point where I don't know. I always feel weird, like, right when something like that becomes popular, going in and buying it. I don't know, my hipster sense. Goes against it.
Amazon.
So I feel like it's... Say that again.
Amazon.
Yeah. Well, one, I feel like it's now past the point where...
Yeah.
I'm now liking it because it's retro.
Yeah. Everybody at work has it sitting on their desk. It's kind of funny.
But so, amazing, just outside of the story, amazing artistic. I mean,
whole
almost pseudo... Not diesel punk, but, you know, kind of, all right.
Yeah, cool, the whole alternate history side of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. End bosses and then button it up.
Sounds good.
Okay.